Good morning, my friends, and welcome to yet another incredible installment of Weekend Update. From very high above all the puerile and vacuous forms of Wyoming mainstream media, this is Cowboy State Politics. I, of course, am your illustrious host, David Iverson, firmly and permanently ensconced behind the silver Cowboy State Politics microphone and broadcasting to you from the base of the Bighorns at the Cowboy State Politics Studio in Sheridan, Wyoming. Good morning, my friends, and welcome to the program. Happy Saturday. Coming up on today's edition of Weekend Update, I have an exclusive interview with United States Senator Cynthia Lummis. The senator has taken a lot of criticism lately for a vote on Senate Bill 1863, the Prove It Act. Essentially, what the bill would do is authorize the Department of Energy to conduct a study into the carbon footprint of a variety of United States products. A lot of conservatives in the state, including the Wyoming House Freedom Caucus, are saying that the bill is just one more step towards a carbon tax. In Senator Lummis's tenure in the Senate, she and I have only invariably agreed on things. But in this case, at least initially, I don't think that whomever was doing the posting for the Freedom Caucus read the bill. And if they did, they vastly blew the thing out of proportion. Secondly, a lot of the emails that were flying around the state about the Prove It Act didn't tell you a single thing about the bill and served only one purpose: to get people fired up without explaining anything. Ironically, and you'll understand why when we get into the interview, but this is a classic case of do your own research. Don't just read an email that was sent out by somebody else that doesn't tell you anything and then assume that's the facts. Because in this case, posts on social media and emails about the Prove It Act were way off target and highly overblown. Unlike the mainstream Wyoming media, I believe in giving you both sides of the story. You see, a lot of times, and the Cowpie is absolutely famous for this, you'll see an article about a subject that claims to give you both sides of whatever issue they're talking about. They'll quote someone on one side extensively, and then to allegedly present the other side of the issue, they'll write about what somebody else said instead of talking to them personally. And even if they do, it's only a line or two of what they said. Rarely is any issue presented fairly. So on today's program, we'll have the interview with Senator Lummis so that she can explain her vote, and then to present the other side, Campbell County Republican Representative and Chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, John Bair, will join us to present the other side and make that argument. That way, you can listen to both of them and make up your own mind. A revolutionary idea, I know. But before we get to any of that, Governor Gordon was at the SHOT Show in Las Vegas a couple of days ago, and he was talking to Governor Kemp from Georgia when he embarked on an amazing case of historical revisionism. That's a nice way of saying that you would need a dump truck to haul away the bullcrap that was coming out of the governor's mouth. Before I play this, you might want to go round up a roll of duct tape and wrap it around your head about 12 times just to make sure it doesn't fly apart in a million pieces. Tell me if the following in any way resembles any of your memories of what happened during COVID. Here's the governor.
You know, we cannot let government control us like that. And I think if anything, we're moving the other way on that accord. At least that's the way I feel like most of the state of Georgia is feeling.
You know, and I'd add to that, Brian, I know you went through that, so did Brad. There were times that the pressure was unbelievable. I can remember getting a call from Mark Meadows at the time saying, you got to shut down your state. There were five, I think, or six of us that said, hell no, we're not going to do that.
That's the biggest steaming pile of bullcrap I've ever heard. I remember two solid months where the only thing that was open was the grocery store and two gas stations. That's it. Everything else was closed per the governor's orders. Let me just give you an example from his own health order. Governor Mark Gordon on Twitter, March 24th of 2020, and I quote, Today, we issued an order to temporarily close nail salons, hair salons, barbershops, massage parlor, tattoo, body art, piercing shops, cosmetology, electrology, and aesthetic services until April 3rd. I understand the impact of these measures and sympathize with those most affected, especially small business owners. But this is about saving lives. From Bigfoot 99 News on March 15th of 2022, and I quote, Wyoming went into something close to a lockdown for nearly 2 months in 2020. Some businesses, including restaurants, gyms, hairdressers, could not open at all for several weeks. As the restrictions eased, restaurants could offer carryout and under strictly regulated seating arrangements. On Sunday, March 15th, Governor Mark Gordon ordered that K-12 schools in Wyoming should close through April 3rd in rapid succession through a series of proclamations and executive orders. Americans found themselves living in an official state of emergency. End quote. From the Daily Wire, March 8th of 2021, Wyoming announces end to lockdown, lifts mask mandate. And I quote, Wyoming Governor Mark Gordon announced an end to numerous lockdown measures on Monday, including a statewide mask mandate. Gordon, a Republican, said that the mask mandate would be lifted and businesses such as restaurants, movie theaters, bars, and gyms would be allowed to open at full capacity on March 16th. End quote. So, restaurants, bars, movie theaters, cosmetology, anything aesthetic, hair salons, piercing shops, tattoo parlors, your local YMCA, definitely not barber shops. Really, the only thing that was open was the grocery store and the gas station. But how did the governor put it again?
I can remember getting a call from Mark Meadows at the time saying, you got to shut down your state. There were five, I think, or six of us that said, hell no, we're not going to do that.
Really? Is that how that conversation went, Mark? I can think of a couple hundred thousand people that disagree with you and have the bank statements to prove it. So anyway, that's what Governor Mark Gordon is doing at the SHOT Show, making up history as he goes along. So now let's get to our top story. Recently, Senate Bill 1863, the Prove It Act, was passed out of committee in the United States Senate, and one of our senators, Cynthia Lummis, voted for it. The bill authorizes the Department of Energy to conduct studies into the carbon footprint of a variety of United States products. The reason why this is important, at least according to the senator, is that other countries are doing the exact same thing and using that data to impose tariffs on the United States. And so the bill essentially would allow us to use our own data to refute the claims of other countries. Nothing in the bill says anything about a carbon tax, and according to Senator Lummis, there was an amendment added to the bill to prevent the use of the data generated from the Department of Energy study into the carbon footprint of various U.S. products to be used in furtherance of any sort of carbon tax. Shortly after the vote, a lot of conservatives in Wyoming went absolutely apoplectic that Cynthia Lummis would go along with this bill. The Wyoming House Freedom Caucus issued the following statement, quote, the U.S. Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works forwarded legislation celebrated by proponents as the necessary gateway to a domestic carbon tax on manufactured goods and energy, as well as a carbon tax on imported goods. Yet again, Wyomingites have found themselves paying a politician to help gather bullets to shoot us with. Senator Cynthia Lummis was one of four Republicans to support the carbon tax enabling bill. Voting to sanction a carbon tax as a lawmaker representing the nation's leading energy producer is not only a slap in the face to all Wyoming energy families, it's an endorsement of government-induced energy poverty nationwide. After all, the power to tax is the power to destroy. We urge Senator Lummis to remind herself of three simple facts. CO2 is not a pollutant, Wyoming is coal country, and the climate crisis is a hoax. End quote. I don't think they read the bill before they issued that statement, because it doesn't do any of those things. And just think about the incendiary rhetoric that was used in that statement. Quote, Wyomingites have found themselves paying a politician to help gather bullets to shoot us with, end quote. Here's another one. Quote, a slap in the face to all Wyoming energy families, end quote. Really? Let me give you an example of how off base they are with this statement. During COVID, I criticized Governor Gordon for not using the Level 4 biohazard lab at the University of Wyoming to study COVID, to find out if it really was as dangerous as everybody was making it out to be. In Wyoming, at our university, we have the exact technology necessary to study that virus. And Governor Gordon didn't do it. That didn't make any sense. We had the ability to verify with our own data what other people were saying. Why would you not want to do that? This is exactly what the Prove It Act does. Study our own products, find out what the data is for ourselves, and that way we can use it against what other countries say we're doing. And the Freedom Caucus's claim that this is a precursor to a carbon tax? According to Senator Lummis, whom you'll hear from in just a second, there was an amendment added to the bill to prevent the thing that the Freedom Caucus is talking about. Clearly, this statement by the Freedom Caucus is an attempt to gin people up without giving them exactly what the facts are. As it relates to that, a link to Senate Bill 1863, the Prove It Act, is available on the show content page on cowboystatepolitics.com. I encourage you to go read it for yourself. It's not very long and won't take you very long, but at least you'll have the facts for yourself. In all fairness, I haven't seen the amendment that Senator Lummis refers to in the interview yet. And this point is brought up by Representative John Baer during his interview. So enough of me prattling on. Here's my exclusive interview with United States Senator Cynthia Lummis. Joining me for the first time on Cowboy State Politics is United States Senator Cynthia Lummis. Senator, welcome to the program.
Thanks. It's nice to be with you for this first time, David.
Well, I've tried a couple times to get a hold of you, but you are kind of a busy lady to get a hold of.
Well, I'm delighted that we're touching base today. I know there's some information floating around about the PROVE Act that I want to dispel.
I'm glad you decided to come on the program and talk about it, because there's certainly a lot of stuff floating around on social media about it. I think that a little bit of it is misunderstood. So I guess my first question for you would be, what exactly is the PROVE Act?
The PROVE Act is in response to the European Union collecting data so they can impose some border comparisons among countries about their carbon emissions. Now, we know that the purpose of the European Union in collecting their data is to use these trans-border agreements to have tariffs and other duties among countries. That being the case, we want to collect our own data. We don't want to rely on their data so they can impose tariffs or duties on the United States. So the purpose of the PROVE Act is to authorize the U.S. Department of Energy to collect data on comparing our emissions to those of other countries. So we're the ones who are in charge of our own data. We understand how it was gathered, what components were used to make comparisons between our carbon emissions and other countries. It makes it so we can verify data and not have to rely on other countries' data that they're using to impose tariffs and taxes on us.
Okay, so my first question would be, so what products specifically are some of these other European countries thinking about imposing tariffs based on carbon emissions? Are we just talking like fossil fuel or extractive resources, or is this a whole host of different products?
Well, it can be steel, aluminum, hydrogen, fertilizer, oil, gas, coal. So it's more than just raw materials like oil, gas, and coal. It includes some of the finished products like steel and aluminum, as well as fertilizer. Now, one of the reasons that we want to make sure we don't get hit with a European tariff without having the data to rebut it lies in a very specific example. So in 2019, a French utility company that's partially owned by the federal government canceled a contract for United States liquid natural gas, claiming it was dirty. And then they chose instead to get their supplies from Russia and Algeria. Now, data from our own Department of Energy shows that U.S. liquid natural gas is 40% cleaner than Russian liquid natural gas. And later, this French utility reversed its position and signed a contract for U.S. liquid natural gas. If we rely on their data only, they can impose requirements on us that are completely illegitimate. So we need to prove with our own math that we are cleaner and better able to provide not only raw materials like oil, gas, and coal, but some finished products like steel and aluminum at a much lower carbon footprint.
So I guess my question would be, why buy into the climate game at all? If somebody else is going to impose a tariff on our products, why don't we just slap a retaliatory tariff on a whole bunch of their products and call it a day?
Yeah, and it's because of the World Trade Organization. We participate in the World Trade Organization, and we've seen other countries impose import and export restrictions on us because of information that is used by other countries to allege that the United States is violating some sort of a trade restriction or trade barrier. If we don't have information to counteract what other countries are saying, we're not only setting ourselves up for tariffs, but we're setting ourselves up for trade restrictions.
Okay. Some of the criticism that I've seen online about the Prove It Act is that it might open the door to some sort of climate tax. Could you tell me why that isn't the case and what is in the bill specifically that would prevent such a carbon tax?
Okay. And there is language specifically in the bill that would prevent its use as a carbon tax. Let me read it to you.
Okay, please.
This
do.
Is a quote. This is a quote from the bill. Nothing in this act provides any new authority to any federal agency to impose, collect, or enforce a greenhouse gas emissions tax, fee, duty, price, or charge, or establish a new mandatory reporting requirement, including by regulation, with respect to the domestic production of any category of covered products. So we're very explicit that this can't be used as a precursor to a carbon tax. Furthermore, I sponsored, along with several of the sponsors of the bill that we're talking about, a Senate resolution specifically saying that a carbon tax would discourage manufacturing, lead to jobs moving overseas, less economic growth, and explicitly opposing a carbon tax as detrimental to our economy. So it can't be inferred by the bill or by other pieces of legislation that this is going to lead to a carbon tax or fee or tariff.
Okay. Now, one of the articles I read said that the bill has some supporters that you wouldn't necessarily expect because the thing does relate to carbon emissions. And one of those is Robert Lighthizer. So that was former President Trump's trade representative. Who else is supporting this bill?
Well, I can tell you who some of the sponsors are, the co-sponsors. And I can tell you who some of the groups that are supporting this bill that produce oil and gas, including the American Petroleum Institute, We also have the support of the Petroleum Association of Wyoming, at least in making sure that people understand that I strongly and unwaveringly support the domestic energy industry. So, you know, you have groups, I think, like the Heritage Society, Heritage Foundation, in Washington, D.C., that have concerns that this could be a precursor to a carbon tax. I can, again, point you to the specific language of the law that passed, as it passed out of the Environment Public Works Committee, that says nothing in this act authorizes impose the ability to impose, collect, or enforce a greenhouse gas emissions tax, fee, duty, price, or charge. And I can tell you the oil and gas industry in some groups is supporting this bill.
Well, I think a lot of times with legislation like this, that people are so inundated with climate change this, carbon footprint that, that any legislation that comes out that even remotely mentions the idea of a carbon footprint, there's an immediate negative reaction to it. So how do you think that this, that 1863 or the Prove It Act got so misinterpreted so quickly? Because I just found out about it when I got that phone call last night from our one of our Wyoming representatives. I mean, how is it that this thing got such bad press so quickly?
Yeah, great question. I don't know if the opponents were reading an earlier version of the bill or a different draft of the bill. And so I don't know how it got so out of hand. But let me give you an analogous situation, David, if you have time.
Absolutely. My time is yours, Senator.
Okay, great. So under the Endangered Species Act, we see the determination of whether a species should be listed as threatened or endangered being based on science that is proprietary. In other words, it's hidden from public view. It's hidden from the view of policymakers. So the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is allowed to make listing decisions that affect private property rights in Wyoming dramatically without having to share the information they're basing their decisions on. I think when the government is making decisions that affect our economy, our producers, our wildlife, our water, our natural resources, that we should have the ability to see the information they're basing their decisions on, so we can peer review it, so we can vet it, so we can find out whether it's accurate or not. That's what the PROVE Act is for. It is to make sure that we have collected information about our own economic production of natural resources and steel and aluminum and other finished and semi-finished products that can be peer reviewed, that we know is credible data. So we don't have to rely on data that we have not collected, that we have not vetted, that we don't know what formula is being used. We want to be able to prove that our carbon footprint is better than other countries. We know we can improve, produce products in a more environmentally sound manner. We already do. Our laws are so much more restrictive than in other countries. We should get credit for that on the broad economic world trade efforts that we make to distribute our products around the world.
Well, I don't think that there's any question that products that are produced in America are done so in a much more environmentally conscious manner than in pretty much any other country. I don't think there's a question then about that. But is there a mechanism by which, let's say that, you know, our scientists find out the data suggests that our carbon footprint is way low on this product, and then there's a dispute with another country, France, for example. Is there a mechanism that says, okay, we have a dispute in the data. Is there a mechanism that says, here's how we resolve that? Or is it just a he said, she said type of deal?
Well, certainly if that happens, we will be able to show our data, how we produced it, and they will have to show their data and how they produced it. And so we can come up with a conclusion based on provable or scientific data. Let me give you an example there. Bill Gates and a lot of the adherents to the United Nations climate change work run around the world and say that cattle produce carbon emissions and that cattle production is a problem for the climate, and so we should be eating less beef. Well, Oxford University checked out the data that was being used to make that claim, applied a more accurate formula, and found out that cattle are actually carbon sinks. In other words, they're good for the environment when it comes to sequestering carbon. So if you can't see the formula that was used to produce the conclusions, you don't have the opportunity to challenge the conclusions. We want to make sure we have good data based on good scientific methodology that we can then show the world to prove that our data is based on good scientific methodology. And if someone proves us wrong using better scientific methodology, that will come out in the wash.
So essentially, the PROVE Act is one big, gigantic study bill, and for lack of a better terminology.
Yes, David, that's correct. That's all it is.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, I think that that's a lot clearer because reading, you know, some of the press reports about it, they're horribly confusing. And even, you know, when I read the text of the bill early this morning, it's pretty clear to me that that's exactly what it is. But I think that a lot of times when bills are misunderstood, at least this is the case with the Wyoming legislature, that if you have questions with the bill, look who sponsored it. And that might tell you if it's, you know, if it's a good bill or a bad bill. But in this case, I mean, I didn't see anything in there that was in any way would make it a terrible bill.
Senator Kevin Cramer, who is one of the primary proponents of this bill, is a North Dakota Republican who comes from a very important oil and gas producing state. As you know, the yep. Bakken is a huge contributor and economic driver for the oil and gas industry in the United States. And he's a huge proponent of U.S. oil, gas, LNG, and having a strong export market so the United States can reestablish itself as the global leader in the production of energy. So we can be energy independent and sell our energy around the world and have the data to prove to other countries that buy our energy that they're getting a cleaner product than they can get from anywhere else. That's another reason that I'm on the bill. And I want to thank you, David, for giving me the time to explain this so people will understand that this is an attempt to prove that American products, whether they're raw materials or finished materials, are the cleanest, best, most capably produced that can be obtained anywhere in the world.
All right. I have one more question on this topic. And then if you have time, I'd like to ask you about something else. But my last question on the PROVE Act is, who is going to be doing the study into the carbon footprints? There's a lot of pretty reputable universities that are totally on the climate change bandwagon. So, you know, and a lot of times, it matters a great deal who is doing the study and whether or not the data they come up with is credible. Because there's a lot of universities that say absolutely climate change is a fact and there's no disputing it, while other universities say, well, no, the data is faulty. So the question is, who is going to be doing the studying on the carbon footprint for all of these products?
Well, the Department of Energy is tasked with doing the study. Now, sometimes when federal agencies are tasked with doing studies, they will contract with universities to do it. But it will be important that we make sure that the science is transparent, their methodology is in, and their study methods are transparent, so we can vet, you know, third-party vet or peer-to-peer vet that their methodology was correct. And that's something I've been trying to get done with the Endangered Species Act for a long time, because as you pointed out, there are universities whose data is being relied on to make determinations into threatened and endangered species. And the university data is proprietary. We can't vet it. We can't see it. We can't prove it right or wrong. We're not even allowed to look at it. So it's going to be very important that this data be transparent so we can third-party vet it.
Well, in some cases, it's proprietary and preposterous, definitely when you're talking about the Endangered Species Act. But I think that that pretty well sums up, you know, what the PROVE Act is. But the other question I wanted to ask you was about cryptocurrency. And I know that you're pretty involved in all things blockchain and cryptocurrency. And my question is, are you concerned that having such a big emphasis on cryptocurrencies, that that might open the door to some sort of central bank digital currency and help destabilize the dollar? This is something I focus on in my program invariably, and I've got one of the ladies that is pretty involved in that, so I just thought I would ask you.
Yeah, the U.S. Treasury and the Federal Reserve are the ones that have destabilized the dollar. They've destabilized it since 2008 through quantitative easing. They issue more money than they should, and in doing so have turned our global economy, as led by the U.S. dollar, into a credit economy. So the destabilizer is our own government. We are the enemy. The thing that Bitcoin specifically can do is be a stabilizer, because there will only be 21 million Bitcoin ever mined. And the more people that adopt Bitcoin, the more durable, reliable, and predictable it becomes. Now, with regard to a central bank digital currency, I have co-sponsored legislation to oppose a central bank digital currency. The advantage of Bitcoin, of course, is also that it's completely decentralized. There is no trusted third party like a central bank that you have to rely on not to manipulate the currency. Now, we already have a central bank, the Fed, the Federal Reserve, that is manipulating our currency through quantitative easing. So why would we want to give them additional authority to create a digital currency they can further manipulate? So I strongly disfavor a central bank digital currency and have my name on legislation to make sure we never have one in the United States.
Yeah, the whole idea of that thing just scares the daylights out of me. Senator, one last question, and probably the most important of all. When do you get to come home?
Well, I get to come home almost every weekend. My joy to come home and just see the people of Wyoming, run into them at the feed store or the grocery store. Look at the prices that people are paying.
Oh, wow.
For food and rent and gasoline and insurance. And talk to people about our everyday lives. to talk about the southern border with people from Wyoming who are terribly alarmed, to talk about the fentanyl crisis as a result of a porous southern border. Wyoming people are as good a barometer as you could ever find for what's good in America and what's going wrong with America. And right now, America is on the wrong track. And Wyoming people have the best common sense of any people I've ever run into anywhere in my life. So when I need a good dose of common sense, I come home to Wyoming, and I'm looking forward to doing so this weekend. If I could, David, I'd also like to put out my sincere condolences to Senator John Barrasso. His wife, Bobby, passed away last evening. Fortunately, he got to be there when she passed away. Okay. He had been here in Washington yesterday morning. We had both appeared in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee to support the nomination to the Federal District Court for Wyoming of our new judge. And then he immediately flew off to be home with Bobby and got to be there when she passed away. So I went to college with Bobby at the University of Wyoming. So I've known her for many, many decades. What a bright light for Wyoming. And my sincere condolences to her daughter, Hadley, and to her dear husband, my colleague, John Barrasso.
Perhaps it's a blessing in disguise. I know that she's been fighting with cancer for a great long time. My prayers are with Senator Barrasso and his family all day. Senator, thank you very much for taking the time to visit with me. We look forward to having you back on the program anytime you like.
Thanks so much, David. This has been fun as our initial visit, and I'll look forward to many more.
Thank you again, Senator. So that is Senator Lummis's side of the story. I really don't think that this thing is as dangerous as the Freedom Caucus is letting on. It makes perfect sense to me to study our own products and find out exactly what the data is instead of relying on what somebody else says it is. Really, when you boil it all down, this bill is about trade. For once, it's not really about the climate. Before we go any further, let's take a quick break and get a word in from our sponsors. We'll pick it right back up with my discussion with Wyoming Freedom Caucus Chairman John Baer. But first, an absolutely egregious profit timeout. Cowboy State Politics is brought to you by Morton Buildings. If you've been thinking about a building for your property, whether it's an outbuilding or a garage or maybe something bigger like a barn or a roping arena or maybe even a gigantic warehouse for your business, the two guys you need to talk to are Nick and Jesse at Morton Buildings. They are the experts in metal building construction. They've been doing it longer than anybody else around, and they definitely do a much better job than anybody else. You'll receive a 50-year warranty on the foundation, which is something that you're not going to get from any of their competitors. What they do is they pour concrete pillars and then insert steel beams inside them and then set the foundation on top of those. That way, there's no possibility of water getting underneath your foundation and ruining your building. To get more information, call Nick and Jesse at 307-674-2532, or you can check them out on their website at mortonbuildings.com. In Wyoming, we always try to plan ahead. Generally, it's not a good idea to leave the house in the middle of winter without having a winter survival pack in your car. Snow boots, a blanket, maybe some warm socks from the Buffalo Wool Company. By the way, you can get some of those at thebuffalowoolco.com. But you also need to start making plans for the summer, whenever that white stuff stops flying around. Right now is a perfect time to get your camper in shape for all of those summer adventures. And the people that you should talk to do that are Young's Camper Repair over in Worland. Their phone number is 307-431-8110, or you can go to their website at www.youngscamperrepair.com. One of the cool things about Tim and Tammy Young's business is that if there's no way you can get your camper to them, they'll travel to you. pretty cool. Not a lot of businesses will do that. So whatever your camper repair needs are, give Tim and Tammy Young at Young's Camper Repair a call. Again, their phone number is 307-431-8110. The following advertisement was paid for by Reed Raisner for Senate. And now, back to the program. All of that being said, it's important that you get both sides of the story. So here's my discussion with Chairman of the Wyoming House Freedom Caucus, John Baer. Joining me via Zoom to talk about the other side of Senate Bill 1863 is Wyoming Freedom Caucus Chairman John Baer. I figured that we ought to give the other side of this argument a chance to give their position, and so I asked John to come on the program. John, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, David. I appreciate you having me. This is an important topic, especially for my county and my district, so I do appreciate you letting me have an opportunity to rebut some of the things that are being said.
Well, I decided I would do something, well, I do this a lot, that the mainstream media never does, and that's show people both sides of the argument. It's almost always one-sided, and I thought this is a perfect opportunity to give both sides of it. So what's your take on Senator Lummis's vote on 1863?
Well, I'll get into 1863 in a moment, but I'll just start with her defense of her vote. And I will say this, first of all, that she and I can certainly disagree on these types of things. And I think that that's not only okay and acceptable, but healthy. But the real difference that I would say between she and I is that she is trusting the Democrats in Washington, D.C. to not take her vote and the bill 1863 and turn it into something that the state of Wyoming just cannot survive, frankly, what they could do with it. And we've already seen that behavior. If we look at the new standards for methane gas release that just came out in December, we know that, you know, shortly before that, measurement of these emissions had started, and then once they had the data, they used it to create a new rule and a new restriction and a new regulation, which is going to cost a great deal to the oil industry just right here in Wyoming. So I would anticipate that once we are measuring in some fashion the quote-unquote carbon footprint of different products, then that data will then be used to institute a carbon tax. Now, I think she believes that this particular bill will not institute a carbon tax, and that is in the language. I would agree with that. But an amendment was brought to ensure that this measurement couldn't be used in a way to create a carbon tax in the future, and that amendment was defeated. And yet, Senator Lummis voted for the bill anyway. So if that amendment, which would have given some protection from a future carbon tax locally and domestically, that was defeated, then, you know, I guess the writing should have been on the wall that this is a dangerous path to go down. Now, the bill itself, if you don't mind, I'd just like to go into my reasons for believing that the bill is a bad direction to go. And you and I think, have talked about this before. I've been very critical of the governor coming into this narrative and coming alongside the left when they have a narrative that CO2 is a pollutant, and how it's dangerous for elected officials in the state of Wyoming to lean credence to that narrative, which scientifically is really difficult to prove. And if it is provable, the particular regulations and behaviors that our government is instituting really don't go after the most obvious concerns that would be associated with this if it were pollutant. So my first claim is that CO2 is not a pollutant, and that our elected officials here in Wyoming should by no means contribute to the narrative that it's an evil thing, and nor should it be measured by an individual product basis. I think that's a dangerous thing. Why do I believe that? Well, first of all, our atmosphere only contains 0.041% of CO2. It is actually the 30th in the list of most effective greenhouse gases. The number one greenhouse gas is water vapor. And I have heard no one trying to eliminate clouds whatsoever. We know that carbon has been higher in history in the past, and yet we're still here. We know that when we talk about being carbon zero and carbon negative, the science will tell you that if we actually became carbon negative, we would all die. That's a pretty big claim, but I think it's scientifically proven. When the plants have no carbon to feed on, they all die. Without plants, human life would come to an end. Since we've had some warming, and I won't dispute that our planet warms and cools at different times, there's cycles, that's weather and climate. That's why we have those two words in our dictionary. But since it's been a little bit warmer, our agricultural output has increased, our standard of living is higher, our length of life is higher. And well, we all know that you talk often about the 9 months of winter in the state of Wyoming. If we got a little bit warmer, that would be a little better too, I believe. So having said all that, you know, one of the things that we don't hear politicians who bring this up as a concern and who come along the left with their narrative is, what is the cost to benefit ratio? And I believe that the people of Wyoming and the people that are represented by Cynthia Lummis, Governor Gordon, and myself deserve to know what is it that they're going to get in return, and what is it going to cost them to go down this path of carbon neutral or carbon negative. And I do believe that this bill, 1863, is one more step in that direction. I believe I explained that earlier, why I believe that. So what does that mean? Well, I'm going to just talk specifically about my district and what this would mean for my district. When I look at Gillette and Campbell County with 13 coal mines, I just do the numbers and I say, okay, what would it take to replace one coal mine just for the revenue for my community and for the state? And because we tax every single coal car leaving Campbell County, that's a lot of tax dollars. So to replace that, we always talk about diversification, how important it is. Well, we would have to have 300 average size businesses to replace that one coal mine. So think about how many people it would take to man up 300 businesses. And maybe you could do the Joe Biden thing. Hey, those coal miners, they can be learn how to program to bring in 300 programming businesses. You could argue that. But here's the thing. To replace all 13 mines, David, it would take 5.5 million people in Campbell County. Now, I don't think there's anybody in Campbell County, let alone Wyoming, that would like Campbell County to have 5.5 million people. And so really the idea that we can survive if we don't promote our legacy industries, it's actually impossible. And when I talk about the cost benefit, we're talking about potentially 1 degree difference in 100 years. And we already saw that the going down this path so far has cost us, you know, an 8% increase in our electric bills this year. It was going to be 30%, and you saw the reaction of the public to a 30% increase. And those people promoting the 30% increase, they weren't even promising a 1 degree improvement. All they were saying was, hey, we'd like to have more green energy, and that's what's leading to these higher prices. So I would suspect that our power bills, if we were to eliminate all coal, oil, and gas, all of our legacy industries in Wyoming and our what I would call organic fuels. And by the way, I think that's impossible because everything made out of plastic is made from these things, and we can't live without that. I can just look at the screen here and see all of the plastic surrounding you. We couldn't survive without this plastic. But if it were just used for heating fuel or creating electricity, you can expect your power bills to triple and quadruple. Would the people of Wyoming be willing to pay that price for 1 degree cooler in 100 years? And I think we both know the answer.
Absolutely. I mean, as Obama said, electricity rates will necessarily skyrocket. And I think this is probably the soundbite you were referring to.
Anybody who could go down 300 to 3,000 feet in the mine sure and hell can learn how to program as well. Give me a break. Anybody who can throw coal into a furnace can learn how to program, for God's sake.
Now, one of the things that Senator Lummis mentioned in the interview is that other countries are already engaging in this, determining what the carbon footprint of various products are. And American products are being judged based upon their numbers. And so she said that one of the impetuses behind this bill was to use our own data so that if this is going to be pushed upon us regardless of anything, then we may as well use our own scientists to get the right numbers or at least be able to defend our products. I had two arguments with that. First of all, depending on which university you go to, climate change is a fact or it's a hoax. Most of them claim that it's a fact with dubious science. It really depends on, it's a kind of a who's watching the watchers thing. And then the other thing I brought up to her was that if foreign governments are going to put tariffs on U.S. goods, why don't we just slap a retaliatory tariff on some of theirs and not buy in to the whole climate change narrative? And I agree with you that sometimes, a lot of times, we don't look at the ancillary impacts of a lot of these policies and, what it would really mean to Wyoming. But after having talked with the senator, I don't agree with her all that often, but I do kind of like the idea of if we're going to have to deal with this anyway, we may as well use our own data to do it. But there again, any step forward along this narrative is one that eventually leads to further implications for our extractive industry. So I think that you're absolutely right on that.
Well, I would respectfully disagree with the senator. It's not because of who's creating the data that's making Europeans want Russian products over American products. Let's face it, the proximity of Russia to Europe versus our proximity naturally means that the cost of our products will be higher than Russian products. Now, just remind you of the time that President Trump went over to Europe and talked to NATO. Remember, they were not paying their dues and they weren't doing their portion, putting their portion of their GDP towards defense. And he said, listen, we're going to cut you off. And the first thing you have to do is stop buying your gas from Russia, because this is the very country that is going to threaten you. And they did that. And they were beginning to purchase our products until President Biden came in and reversed a lot of that. They happily bought the cheaper products from Russia until the Ukraine war, and no longer was that available. And you see Germany and places like that having to take their coal-fired power plants out of mothballs. We benefited from that because they were buying our coal.
Literally buying our coal.
That's right. So they put themselves into a corner trying to get that less expensive product. So I believe that this data that they're providing, France is providing for their carbon footprint of different products, it's just an excuse. They'd want to buy the cheaper products because, frankly, their form of government is creating a nightmare of an economy. And so they're looking for anything to help with that. But I will just end with this, that since our founding fathers, when have we ever followed Europe's example?
appreciate you taking the time to visit with me on this. I think it's a really important topic. Certainly, the senator's vote created a lot of controversy in the state. Once again, John, thanks for taking the time. You're welcome back here, as you know, anytime you like.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
So there you have both sides of the story. I still don't think that the Prove It Act endorses a carbon tax like the Freedom Caucus's statement says that it does. And by the way, it wasn't just the Freedom Caucus that put out incendiary press releases about the Prove It Act. There were several emails that hit my inbox with the very same type of rhetoric in them. One in particular came from a county Republican party that attached an article with it. The article didn't have any specifics in it whatsoever. There was no way to tell if the author was telling you the truth or not. In any case, now you have both sides of the story. You heard Senator Lummis' version of it, and we also talked with Representative John Baer from the Freedom Caucus. Now it's up to you to make up your own mind. Again, I put a link to Senate File 1863 on the show content page on the website. Don't forget to subscribe and follow the program. That way you can be notified every single time there's a new installment of Cowboy State Politics. You can do that at the website, cowboystatepolitics.com, or anywhere that you get your podcasts. But for now, from the base of the Bighorns, at the Cowboy State Politics Studio, I'm David Iverson, and this is the one and only Cowboy State Politics.